Welcome, my friends, to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, indeed the fastest growing segment of society. To those of you who have come to know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt. That they are counterproductive. That they just simply can't be fixed. Our mission, reasonably and rightfully, therefore, is to know who is working against our interests, to understand why they're doing so. Because exposing and condemning errant schemes, whether they be patriotic, political, or religious, isn't hateful, it's not hurtful, it's caring. It's the smartest thing we can possibly do. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah. It means teaching, does not mean law. There's not even a Hebrew word for obey. And that is because its enriching and empowering covenant provides the only rational, the only reliable answer for you and your family. Our phone number, anytime over the next 3 hours, if you would like to participate in this discussion, and we would encourage you to do so. Even if you disagree with the host, fact, especially if you disagree. It's 877-300-7645. As I had mentioned in yesterday's program, I want to mention once again today, there is a considerable group of listeners who, as listeners who benefit from the presentations of the news, the analysis of the news, as well as the presentation of Yahweh's Torah guidance, that have banded together to encourage radio stations to carry this program. It's a grassroots movement, and if you as a listener would like to participate, all it requires is for you to express your enthusiasm for the program to the station managers of a variety of radio stations by either telephone or email. A list has already been prepared of those stations and the contact names and information. We would love it if you would join in the promotion of Shattering Myths. Yesterday, we were in the midst of shattering an enormously important myth. The single most important events taking place in the world today, not just my opinion, although I think most reasonable observers would come to the same conclusion, but according to Yahweh, who just happens to be God, the area where we should be the most concerned isn't the Malaysian flight that went haywire. It's not Crimea voting 97% in favor of rejoining the Russian Federation. No, it's not those things. It's not what movie you're going to go see this week. A mudslide in Washington State was terrible, but that's not the most compelling issue in the world today. No, it's the Syrian war. It's a proxy war, one unleashed because of America's misguided invasion of Iraq, giving Iraq to Iran, elevating Shia power in the region, and causing other nations to respond. In the midst of this, we've come to realize that the West, the United States, and Europe in particular, are in opposition to Russia and China in Syria, just as Sunni Islamic fiefdoms like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, Turkey are on one side, and Iran, Iraq, which is now Iran West, Lebanon, are on the other. And as we analyzed this from an article yesterday showing a rift between Qatar and Saudi Arabia, we found both the Saudi Arabians and the Qataris claiming that they were providing weapons, now these would be American weapons, to the moderates and not to Islamic groups. They had to dance around raindrops, and the best they could end up saying is, we're not supplying weapons to Al-Qaeda-affiliated organizations. And so, we came to realize in the midst of this article that there was a alliance now amongst the majority of the Sunni Mujahideen that are engaged in that fight. And it's called the Islamic Front. It's a broader name for what was al-Nusra Front, the Victory Front. And that in that organization, they have a spiritual leader. They have a legal leader. And recently, when the top Sharia, which would be the legal advisor for the group, Dr. Sami al-Oraidi, spoke to the media, he said, and this would be speaking to Al Jazeera, he said that the Islamic Front, which is comprised of fundamentalist Muslim jihadists, armed principally by Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Qatar, all with American weapons, are most influenced by the teachings and writings of Abu Musab al-Siri. Now, beyond the fact that he also acknowledged that the Islamic Front, the rebels that America is arming in Syria, have referred to the United States and Israel as enemies of Islam. So, within that context, we decided it would behoove us to consider the life, the teachings, the endeavors, the behaviors of the man that the majority of the Syrian Mujahideen fighting against the Shia government there in Syria respect. Whose guidance, whose teachings, whose writings are they most influenced by? And it turns out that it was Abu Musab al-Suri, who was born Mustafa bin Abd al-Qadir Setmarim Nassar. We'll just call him Nassar for short. As I shared with you yesterday, he is wanted in Spain for the 1985 El Descanso bombing, where he murdered 18 people. And he is wanted in association with the 2004 Madrid train bombings, where he contributed to the deaths of 191 individuals. Most in the fundamentalist jihadi world, and those who study it, consider Nassar to be the most articulate exponent of modern jihad and its most sophisticated strategist. They don't say this blindly. No, he is the most prolific author on modern jihad. He has written the most compelling articles on Mujahideen strategies in today's world. He has created marketing companies and websites to feature his work, and his work is featured on many others, including Inspire, which has for some time now been the most polished and most effective means for Islamic jihadists to convey their message to the world. It's the site where you will find how to build the kind of pressure cooker bomb in mom's kitchen, as they say, that was used to mutilate and kill so many in Boston. Here's a little teaser on Nassar, and then we'll go through his life. He was captured by the Pakistani security forces in 2005, but they gave him or sent him into Syria. He was also captured by the American CIA, who also released him. It makes you wonder whose side America's government is actually on. Nassar, this given name of the man who has accepted the name al-Suri, was born and grew up in Aleppo in Syria. I will share this week or next a story about Aleppo. It is now the last remaining city that isn't under Assad's dominion. Every other city that played host to the Sunni rebels in opposition to his regime has been recaptured, with the exception of Aleppo. Not much left of Aleppo. And the deal that the Assad government has made with the population of Aleppo is that for every shell that the Sunni Islamic jihadists from around the world fire in the direction of Syrian citizens and in the direction of his military, there will be 5 barrel bombs that will be dropped on the town. So there isn't much left of the place. He attended, as we shared yesterday, 4 years of university studies at the University of Aleppo's Department of Mechanical Engineering. It's a very difficult discipline. It doesn't say that he graduated, but 4 years of wasted study as an engineer in a world that so desperately needs technically trained individuals. But he took a different course. In 1980, Nasser joined the Combatant Vanguard organization, offshoot of the Syrian Muslim Brotherhood, which was at the forefront of the Islamic uprising in Syria against Hafez Assad's regime. Bashar al-Assad is the current head of Syria. Hafez al-Assad was his father. What this tells you is that the current proxy war that is taking place in Syria isn't new. It was not born out of the Arab Spring. It has been simmering for a very long time, sometimes even at full boil, because the events of 1980 and 1982, particularly regarding the town of Hama, a town that has been ravaged once again, are extraordinarily telling. So when we return, we will explain how Nasser joined the Syrian Muslim Brotherhood organization and trained, even claimed to have participated in the uprising of Hama in 1982. Yes, we're talking about the role that Nasser claims to have played in the uprising of Hama. Now, personally, I think he's lying, but that's what Muslims do. You see, he immigrated to France and later to Spain in the 1980s, and I don't think he was actually in Syria at the time, but nonetheless, let's share a little bit about Hama. It is a blight on the soul of Islam. It is one of many reasons why I say that Muslims have no right to dictate to Israel how Israel has treated the mythical people known as the Palestinians. The Hama massacre occurred in February of 1982 when the Syrian Arab Army and the defense campaigns under the orders of the country's then president, Hafez al-Assad, besieged the town of Hama for 27 days in order to quell an uprising by the Muslim Brotherhood against Assad's government. The massacre carried out by the Syrian army, supposedly under the commanding general Rifat al-Assad, President Assad's younger brother, effectively ended the campaign that had begun in 1976 by Sunni Muslim groups, principally the Muslim Brotherhood, against the Syrian government. Before we go on and talk about this massacre, keep in mind that in Egypt, the Morsi government was deposed by the Egyptian military because, as a representative, as the representative of the Muslim Brotherhood, Morsi wanted to avenge the defeat that he and his group suffered in Hama. They, the Muslim Brotherhood, had sought to overthrow the Syrian government. they failed. They were brutalized as a result. And so to even the score, now that the Muslim Brotherhood had control of Egypt, and now that under Morsi, temporarily at least, the Egyptian army, which is entirely funded by the United States, was under his disposal, he wanted to revisit the wrong that he thought that had been done and to deploy the Egyptian military in Syria. The Wiki report on the Hama massacre continues with these words. Initial diplomatic reports from Western countries stated that about 1,000 people were killed. Now, when it comes to Islamic deaths, as we found out in Kosovo, if you hang your hat on a number and say, oh boy, this is the number that was killed, you will almost certainly be wrong. That there isn't just exaggeration, there's exaggeration to the point of ridiculousness. This is very much the case of the deaths that were associated with Saddam Hussein and the gassing of the Kurds. Not only do the people who make such statements never put it in the context of this was a military mission, not a terrorist act on civilians, but a response to the Kurds joining forces with the Iranians inside of Iraq to bring down the Iraqi government, the numbers are just always exaggerated. This is the case here. The Western country stated that 1,000 were killed. Subsequent estimates vary, however, with some claiming that 10,000 Syrian citizens were killed. Others put the number at 20,000. A sympathetic Syrian human rights group put the number at 40,000. About 1,000 Syrian soldiers were killed in the operation, and large parts of the city were destroyed. Alongside such events as Black September in Jordan, where the Jordanian government wiped out tens of thousands of refugees that alleged to be Palestinians. This attack on Hama is described as one of the deadliest acts by any Muslim government against its own people in the Middle East. The vast majority of the victims, no telling how many, were civilians. According to the Syrian reports, anti-government rebels initiated the fighting. Well, that's most likely true. They would have been Muslim Brotherhood fighters like Nasser, who pounced on our comrades while sleeping in their home and killed whomever they could kill, including women and children, mutilating their bodies in the streets, driven like mad dogs in a black hatred, is how the Syrian government reported the initiation of this crime. It sounds very much like what we're witnessing the rebels filming themselves doing even today. It is interesting to listen to the prose of Muslims. Not only did they speak of those that they had murdered, the Syrian government, it was an act of civil war where the government snuffed out its own people. So in this case, it's not really much different than Abraham Lincoln deciding to go to war against the South. But after speaking of them as saying that they were mad dogs driven by black hatred, the Syrian government wrote that they rose up to confront the criminals and taught the murderers a lesson that snuffed out their breath. Yes, indeed, only in Islam. Yes, in America we have much more soaring patriotic rhetoric to justify the deaths of 600,000 Americans. In 1987, Nasser and a small group of Syrian friends, who would have thought that it would have been written in Wikipedia as Syrian friends. These guys are mass murderers. Syrian friends left Spain for Peshawar, where they met Abdallah Azzam. Now, if you hear the name Abdallah Azzam and it means something to you, then you're on your game. If you hear the name Abdallah Azzam, and boy, it's just one more of those crazy Muslim clerics and I've got no clue. And you're probably like most people. This article says that Abdullah Azzam is the godfather of the Arab-Afghan movement. Yeah, that would be somewhat true. Abdullah Azzam is the founder of Al-Qaeda. It's not Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden joined Al-Qaeda. You see, Abdullah Azzam was held a Ph.D. He was educated in Cairo by the Muslim Brotherhood, a extraordinarily articulate member of the Muslim Brotherhood. He moved from Egypt to Afghanistan with the express purpose of working with the Taliban to establish a Islamic state. And this means that when Zbigniew Brzezinski and Jimmy Carter decided, along with Gates, who became Secretary of Defense and CIA Director, that they would start a proxy war in Afghanistan, renting Pakistan's Taliban from the Pakistani government, arming and equipping them to fight a proxy war against the Soviet-backed government to give the USSR a taste of what they had given America in Vietnam, the fellow they would have worked with is Abdullah Azzam. He was the beneficiary of over $5 billion of American money and weaponry. And he is the legitimate founder of Al-Qaeda. Well, Nasser studied under Abdullah Azzam. He was enlisted as a militia, a mujahideen trainer at the camps for Arab volunteer fighters of mujahideen who fled into Afghanistan, as they have into Syria, to fight the great jihad. And so Nasser fought on the front lines against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan, therefore also wielding American weapons and spending American taxpayer money. Nasser met Osama bin Laden in Peshawar after having been a student of the founder of Al-Qaeda, Abdullah Azzam. And he may have, for a short time, been part of the inner circle, as one would expect based upon his relationship with Dr. Abdullah Azzam. When Nasser returned to Syria, however, things began to unravel a bit with the Osama bin Laden relationship. You see, in Peshawar, Nasser, who has since become well known under his various pen names, he's written under the name Umar Abd al-Hakam and now al-Suri, but it's under Hakam that he first published his 900-page treatise called The Islamic Jihadi Revolution in Syria. And so if there is an ideology, it's his own. Now, he didn't write this out of whole cloth. He simply applied Islamic Quran and Hadith sightings, quotations, Muhammad's example, to his book. His book is essentially the same length as Prophet of Doom. References the same statements from Muhammad and his companions. It's also known as the Syrian Experience. The treatise is a vehement attack, by the way, on the very group that groomed Nasser initially to be a Islamic jihadist, the Muslim Brotherhood. And then he turned his sights, also condemning Al-Qaeda. It is so typical of Muslims. In 1985 to 1995, Nasser adopted Syria as his primary place of residence, even though he traveled extensively and spent much time in Afghanistan. In Spain, he married his wife, Elena Moreno in 1987. She, of course, was forced to convert to Islam, which allowed him to become a Spanish citizen. He repaid that kindness, of course, by killing 191 Spaniards in a train bombing. Nasser first moved to London and brought his family along in mid-1995. Now, this is after he has written a treatise on how to be an effective jihadist, how to be an Islamic terrorist. It's possible that he fled Spain because of suspicions that he was involved in the 1995 Islamist terror bombings in France. For a time, Nasser edited Al-Ansar. Ansar is the friends, the supporters, who embraced Muhammad when he fled Mecca in shame and entered Yathrib, today's Medina. It was, and some still claim remains, the most important jihadi magazine of its day. It has ties to the Algerian Armed Islamic Group. It's GIA, is because of the Arabic acronym. For those who have read the Islamic Terrorist Timeline and on the Prophet of Doom site, GIA, the Armed Islamic Group, plays prominent roles throughout the history of some of the most debilitating and ruthless acts of terrorism in northern Africa and indeed in Europe. Nasser left the journal in 1996, partly to disagreements with the new GIA leadership in Algeria, and partly as a result of a conflict with his editor. The widely regarded, the latter, this would be the editor, Abu Qatada, was widely regarded as the principal cleric or imam of jihadis in Europe. Qatada, if I'm connecting the dots correctly, was an imam for a period of time in the Al-Qad Mosque in Hamburg, Germany, and recruited most of the Islamic jihadists that participated in 9/11 in the United States. In 1997, Nasser established a media company called the Islamic Conflict Studies Bureau with Mohammed Bahia. Through his media office, he facilitated two important media events in Afghanistan. In particular, for those of you who know and have watched Peter Bergen's CNN interview with Osama bin Laden in March of 1997. In the autumn of 97, Nasser left London for Afghanistan, operating initially as a lecturer on Islamic and jihadi tactics and as a trainer of Arab Afghan camps in that country. Now, he was running his own training camps of how to be an effective Islamic terrorist. He ultimately settled there with his family in 1998. In 1999, he formed a media and research center in Kabul, and in 2000, he opened his own training camp, the Al-Garaba camp, located in Karga, near Kabul. Nasser's camp was formerly part of the Taliban's Ministry of Defense. So as you listen to all of this, for the West to say, the Islamic Front is now the representative of Al-Qaeda when its spiritual leader, the man who is most responsible for its strategies, was only tangentially associated with Al-Qaeda and throughout most of his life was an independent actor in the jihadi movement, far more closely allied to Azam than bin Laden, far more closely aligned with the Taliban than Al-Qaeda, you're beginning to see why when we make such connections in the media, in politics, and in the military, blaming Al-Qaeda for all of the ills that Islam is actually committing, we do everyone a grave disservice. This man's life is reprehensible. He's repulsive, but he's repulsive on his own as a direct result of his personal quest to be the perfect Muslim. He had a complete and total fallout, according to Wikipedia, with what little contact he had with bin Laden's organization in 1998. So here is the most important spiritual leader of the Islamic Front, of the largest group of jihadi fighters in the Syrian conflict, and he ceased to have any association with Al-Qaeda or bin Laden as far back as 1998. And even prior to that time, he was an independent operator and far more closely allied with other groups. We'll be back in a moment. The truth is important. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. In a 7-page letter in mid-1998, that's a long time ago, Nasser launched a scathing criticism of bin Laden for the disdain Al-Qaeda had shown towards the Taliban leadership of Afghanistan, including Mullah Omar. He also highly criticized their strategies and denounced Al-Qaeda's 1998 attacks on the U.S. embassies in East Africa and the 11 September attack in New York's Twin Towers, where he argues it put a catastrophic burden on the jihadi cause. Now, this is important. Just as the American capture and murder of Osama bin Laden and his files in Pakistan about a driver and wedge from the military academy of the Pakistanis proved conclusively that America was lying when it said that we were at war with Al-Qaeda and that there were Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups responsible for most of the world's terrorist acts. What we learned when we investigated Osama bin Laden's home is that he had no influence and that the very groups that were routinely associated with him, he denounced. For example, the Islamic State in Iraq, which was considered the largest Al-Qaeda presence in the world at the time, he said, I have nothing to do with you. I don't agree with you. He just went on and lambasted them, saying, you're associated with my name, but I have nothing to do with you. Never had anything to do with you. Denounced them. Showed absolutely no influence over them. The same thing was true with the group that used the name Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, the base in the Arabian Peninsula. He didn't agree with them, didn't support them, didn't influence them, didn't franchise them. Well, here now, from the other side, what we're finding is that the Islamic Front, which gets its strategic guidance from Nasser, that Nasser denounced and separated from any association with Al-Qaeda, which was even tenuous at that point, and wrote a scathing letter condemning Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden in 1998. And so how is it that the Islamic Front, al-Nusra Front, is associated with Al-Qaeda when the writings, the inspiration that guide them were written by Nasser, who is a huge critic of Al-Qaeda? Every time you turn over a rock and you learn what's under it, you find that the American political machine is lying. Remember when President Obama pounded his chest and said, we got him, you know, we got Osama bin Laden, and he said, I want to make this point perfectly clear that America is not at war with Islam. We have never been at war with Islam, but Al-Qaeda picked this fight with us, and, you know, we're going to bring the fights to Al-Qaeda. All that was a lie. Every time the media or a politician, and they do it routinely every single day, associate the carnage in the world with Al-Qaeda as opposed to Islam, they are being deliberately, knowingly, purposefully disingenuous. They're lying. And the media doesn't seem to have an ethical, knowledgeable, moral journalist among them, because they are perpetuating those same lies. The facts are all consistent. This man, Nasser, was inspired by Muhammad, by his Quran recital, and by his hadith oral reports, by his life. And he wrote consistently about how to be a good Muslim and how to follow Muhammad's example by being a jihadist. This is an extraordinarily important point. Well, in September of 2003, the Spanish magistrate indicted 35 members of the Madrid cell that Nasser led for its role in the September 11th attacks. It included, of course, Nasser. In September of 2004, the United States Department of State named Nasser its most wanted terrorist and offered a reward of $5 million for him.